It's time for Motherlode Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherlode. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.
Well, good morning and welcome to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. We are in the midst of a five-part series in which we're talking with the five Tuolumne County supervisors individually. It's something we do each fall. It's a chance to hear straight from the board members about issues facing both their specific district and the county as a whole. Earlier, we heard from Ryan Campbell and Steve Griefer. If you missed those shows, you can find them archived in the media section of MyMotherLode.com. Today, we're pleased to be joined in studio by District 3 Supervisor Anaya Kirk. Supervisor Kirk, it's great to have you back on Motherlode Views.
Yeah, thank you, BJ. I can't believe it's already been a year since I've been here. It feels like time's flying by, but thank you for having me and appreciate the opportunity.
So before we get into issues, remind us, District 3, where does it all cover?
Yeah, it starts basically the top is Sonora Pass. You drive down 108 and you go through all those towns. Yeah, Kennedy, Strawberry, Pinecrest, of course, Beardsley, Tweenheart, Sierra Village, Muick Village. Sorry, there's a whole bunch of little towns down that road. And then when you hit Tweenheart, it kind of loops around, goes by Soulsbyville area, and then out Woodham Carn towards Tuolumne City, Tuolumne proper, and then back up to like Tuolumne Road area, Ponderosa Hills. So it kind of does a big fishhook, and it's massive and lots of U.S. Forest Service land, and born and raised in the district and proud to represent it.
And you are going to run for re-election this next year?
Yes, I am going to run. I actually was on my way out the door. I got some people know I got my real estate license a couple years ago, and I was planning on phasing out of politics. I got two kids who want to get their doctorate degrees for the careers that they want to go into. So I started doing the math and realized I needed to cash flow it. And so I got my real estate license, started doing that. And then as folks know, Holland and Griefer got elected. And basically I told them right before they were seated, I told them I'm going to put some things on the agenda. Come January, February, and depending on how those items go, it'll decide whether I stay or go. And so a lot of folks know what happened in January, February. There's major changes that took place. And once I saw that there are folks willing to do the hard work and make the hard decisions, I spoke with my wife, prayed about it, and just realized, you know what, I need to stick around, and I'm going to give it another term and see if we can't keep accomplishing some culture change and some budgeting changes and really set our county up to be functioning properly into the future. So I am running, and that's why.
We'll get into some of those changes that you mentioned a little bit later on, but I like to start these shows kind of hyper-focused on your specific district. So District 3, you know, what are kind of the big issues and projects right now in the district?
Sure. So I wrote down a couple of thoughts. The first one that comes to mind is Pinecrest. Pinecrest is heavily utilized both by our constituents and also constituents from other counties, other states, actually all over the world. And everybody knows the mess. I don't need to go into all the detail, but it's been a mess up there. But finally, with the increase in law enforcement presence that we've been able to do through some budget changes, hiring more deputies, having the votes to address Pinecrest, we've put in no parking signs. We got fire lanes. We increased our ordinance fines, and we're probably going to actually bump those up again. So just in that in that alone, really the highlight of it, and I just had a town hall up in Pinecrest earlier, and the residents up there said it was night and day difference. So just the law enforcement presence alone has changed the culture up there, but there's still more work that needs to be done, I believe. So we're going to kind of have a powwow now that it's fall time, meet with some of the users up there, meet with some of the businesses, because we think we want to know what's worked, what hasn't, but then see if there's additional things that we might want to implement. Some of those additional things might be some overflow parking ideas, potentially linking up with Dodge Ridge. There might be a discussion about potentially doing some meters in some specific parking spots to offset those law enforcement costs. There'll be more to come, but I'm proud to say that with the increase in law enforcement presence, things are changing, and we're going to continue down that path.
Are there any development projects right now in Tweenheart?
I know, yeah. In Tweenheart, we all know that the shopping center was voted by the board to have some development done within the original footprint of the shopping center and some addition to it. I did vote no on that project. I won't go into all the details, but it was basically because of the landlord who was proposing the project. I think it's a good project. I just want to make sure it's done properly and that we have good, nice housing up there. With that being said, it did get approved. So right now, though, and that was a couple of years ago. All we're at right now is they've just pulled permits to do some demolition. If you go there right now, in the northern part of that shopping center, they're doing some demolition, but that's the only permit that's been pulled yet. There hasn't been any, you know, applications or permits pulled for the additions coming, but that's up to the developer, and we'll see what happens into the future.
How about the Cyril project? That's a big forest resiliency effort in your district.
Yeah, the Cyril project is probably one of the most amazing things, and we don't really talk about it enough, and we don't, you know, Tuolumne County residents need to know that Tuolumne County is kicking butt when it comes to forest management. We are literally leading the nation. We've had about $93 to $95 million allocated, and we've spent, I believe, $53 million. And all it is, in the simplest terms, is when you're driving up the Pinecrest and you look to the left and you see how the forest has been cleaned out, that is happening all over the Forest Service land footprint within our county. It goes deep down into canyons. There's more work coming. But it's a mastication, it's some logging, it's prescribed burning, it's all of the above. And if you look at some maps that have been developed, the course of work between Cyril and Cal Fire and all these entities, BLM, all these entities that have been working on the forest, we basically have a huge horseshoe around Tuolumne County. And that's a big reason why we have not burned down, why we haven't had any mega fires. Unfortunately, it's been used against us in the insurance world. We're rated as the number one on Fair Plan because they view us as the highest threat to potentially burn down. Unfortunately, they don't know why we haven't burned down. It's because we've done our job. And that's part of the reason. I know we just had a board meeting, and I basically, anytime the insurance commissioner folks get in front of our board, I basically give them a piece of my mind, because it's not just my mind. It's what the constituents' mind is. We're fed up with it. We're tired of it. We're pissed that there's been inaction for over 7-8 years. And it wasn't until recently, when LA started to burn down, that the insurance commissioner got his acting gear and started making these changes. There are changes that are good and they're coming, but they're a little too late. But I won't rant on that too much. Just go back and look at the last board meeting, and you can get an earful of what my thoughts were.
How about the roads in your district? Are there certain areas that you'd like to see some updates?
Yeah, every single road. I'd love to see an update. So let's just talk about that real quick. Really quick. North Tuolumne Road, we all know that north of Ponderosa, just right north of Ponderosa Hills, there was a huge washout. We were able to do some work to address some of the drainage so that when the wet seasons come, it hopefully won't slip again. We are still waiting for phase two of that road. That's the major project to get that road fixed. It's about $4 or $5 million. We're waiting for some money to come through on that from, let's see, the acronym here is FHWA. I don't know what that stands for, but it sounds important. So we're waiting for that funding to come through. As far as roads in general, I think we'll just talk about this real quick, because I was going to talk about it during budget. But the constitutional obligation of county government is to provide for the safety and security of its constituents. And that includes fire, law enforcement, and roads. So let's talk about roads. Well, to me, it's roads, because you got to have the infrastructure to provide those services. So something radical that just happened that I want people to be aware about, that I've been wanting to do for years, but we finally had the votes and the ability to do it just recently, is the conversation about trans occupancy tax and its allocation. Everybody knows, or for those of you who don't know, when TOT, we have 12% TOT. So if you stay in a hotel and we get $12 for that hotel, that $12 goes into the general fund. And so, sorry, I don't know if I said that clearly. If you stay in a hotel for $100 and we charge 12%, we get $12. So that $12 goes into the general fund, and it can generally go, BJ, anywhere. But when you look at the measures that we put forth when we raised TOT to 12%, it said that these funds were even though it's not a special revenue, it's a specific measure, these funds are intended to be used for fire, law enforcement, and roads. Now, if you look at the fire fund, it's way more. So let me back up. TOT brought in $9.7 million last year, okay? The fire fund is worth $10, $12 million. The law enforcement fund is like $32 to $34 million. And then so we all know that we need more, obviously, than $9.7 million of TOT. But where it really helps with the road conversation is we're only allocating, BJ, $780,000 a year from our general fund to roads. Now, there's other AB1 monies that comes in that goes to roads. I think it's to the tune of $3 to $4 million. But the point is, we're only allocating $780,000 a year from general fund. And then at the end of the year, if we have any money left over, we all have this scramble, and we try and pick, you know, each supervisor tries to pick their pet project and get funding, and that might be the tune of 800 to 1.5 million, maybe, right? Depends on how much money we have left. What we just did, what I proposed, was that we look at the TOT money coming in and we allocate it to those priorities that we say we should that we should fund, which we said in the measures when we put the measure out to bid or to vote. So, although it's not a special revenue, it can't be an automatic allocation. So every year we have to vote on it. So the thing that was proposed was every year we're going to vote to put 28% towards fire, 28% towards law enforcement, and 28% towards roads. And then I think the 16%, which was left over, was going to go to the Visitors Bureau. That percentage is going to go to the Finance Committee, which I sit on. We're going to flesh out in a little bit more detail those percentages. But to roads and to my district, what that means is we're going to go from $780,000 a year to basically $2.5, $2.7 million a year. And we've bought hot patch machines. We've bought a paver. We just recently bought a new paver. We just basically bought a new chip seal machine. We just added two more road crew workers. Our director is working on a plan, a road maintenance plan, things that we're already doing, but a real in-depth plan to do more preventative maintenance stuff. We're looking at a county in Idaho where every 7 years, every single road gets retouched by pavement or chip seal. So I want people to hear that these are things that I've been working on and striving for years, but they're finally actually taking place. And so when we talk about going from 780,000 to 2.5, 2.7 million, what that means is I can go into Tweenhart. I can go into Miwok, Sierra Village. I can go into all those places in Miwok that will never see the light of day as far as getting new asphalt. And I can actually, through the chip seal machine and through that paver, having our crews put that asphalt down, save millions. And we can potentially get on a 7-year plan where every 7 years, those roads are getting touched. And some pushback I've gotten is, well, you know, that product's only good for 5 to 7, 8 years. And I'm like, yeah. And the road hasn't seen asphalt in 30 years. What do I care? Like, let's get on a plan. So it's big, it's coming, and I'm excited about it, and there's going to be a lot more to come on it. So sorry, that was a lot of information. But people want, again, they want roads, they want fire, and they want law enforcement. And I don't know why it takes people so long to figure that out, but I've known that, and I think we have a board that has figured that out, and we're going to deliver on it.
Need to take a quick break. We're talking to District 3 Supervisor Anaya Kirk on this weekend's Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. We're in the midst of our 5-part series talking with the individual Tuolumne County Supervisors. We'll have our second segment coming up in just a minute.
Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area for family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service. Call 532-2460. That's 532-2460.
Welcome back to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. We're talking with District 3 Tuolumne County Supervisor Anaya Kirk on this weekend show. It's part of our series talking with the individual supervisors over 5 consecutive weeks. Supervisor Kirk, there's been a lot of change these past 10 months in Tuolumne County government. You mentioned the 2 new supervisors, also the CAOs resigned, Community Development Director, Parks and Recreation District, some other positions as well. What's your thoughts on kind of just the overhaul and the changes going on right now?
Well, my thoughts are that we are headed in the right direction. Part of me kind of wonders why people are so surprised. I put out a blog, I believe it was in October or November of last year, and I told folks exactly what I was planning on doing. Again, I'm only one supervisor, so I need votes to make that happen. But I had a roadmap laid out. I've been sharing my thoughts in blogs, in my Facebook videos. So I think the changes were needed. I think there was a culture shift that needed to take place, and I think a lot of it was long overdue. As far as, I want to speak to something that one of my colleagues had said, and I respect the opinion that we all are going to have different opinions, right? But there's been some conversation about there being low morale at the county, or people are concerned for losing their job, for their jobs, or there's been mentioned that there's hostility towards public servants. So I just want to kind of talk to those three real quick. As far as morale, The reality of the budget is really simple. You can only pay for what you have coming in. So we've been on this trajectory for a while. We've had the SAFER grant. We have things that we couldn't afford that have been expenditures. And basically, there's certain things that we can't afford. So we're cleaning up the budget. And naturally, that's going to cause some low morale when there's, you know, when there's cuts, when there's layoffs, when there's I'll just leave that at that. But also at the same time, which people aren't acknowledging, is the economy. The economy is totally different than it was 4 or 5 years ago. Post-COVID, inflation, cost of living, everything is going through the roof. I know people don't care, you know, to know what my numbers are, but I remember meeting with my tax guy a couple of years ago, and I'm like, dude, we're going in the wrong direction. Me, you know, my personal family, I'm like, we're not where we were. We're going backwards. And basically, we were making $21,000 less a year than the years before because, you know, if I get a 1 or 2% raise working wherever, it's getting eaten up by my medical insurance, which is going up 15, 20% a year. So we're all in this together in the sense that the economy is crazy and it's affecting our paychecks. And then another thing, people were talking about, or it was brought up about people were concerned about losing their jobs. Yeah, part of that's budget cuts, but then also our board is holding department heads and folks more accountable. I said in November last year in my blog, and as soon as I, you know, in January, that department heads are coming back to the board for their review. We're no longer going to hold that under the CAO's purview. You are accountable to us. We are the elected officials. The CAO is not elected, and department heads and the CAO report to the board. And so we brought that back, and there's some accountability going on. And I think at the end of the day, that's a good thing, right? Because I think when you directly work for the board and you have meetings with the board and you have your performance evaluations with the board, there's no what ifs or buts. It's very clear what we do behind closed doors and what our expectations are. And then the thing about hostility towards public servants, I didn't really understand that comment that a colleague made. I know for me, I don't think I've been hostile. I think if you want to see me hostile, go back and look at the fire insurance conversations that we had with LaCorda Lara's office. That's me being hostile. But I think holding staff accountable is not hostile. And I think anytime people think that our role is to be buddy-buddy with staff, and then I think if that staff doesn't like us and they think that we're being hostile, I think that's the definition of a bureaucrat. So I've been very clear. I'm not here to be people's friends. I'm not here to, you know, at the end of the day, I might have to fire people or make cuts, and it's a hard thing to do, and it's very personal, and that's part of the reason why I haven't gotten personal. But at the same token, I also understand the value of each employee and how government is here to provide services, and that's all done through people. So we're getting there. It's going to be a minute, but we're cleaning up the budget. We're cleaning up the environment. And you know what, something that's funny that you said is, or that you had brought up in a prior interview, you talked about the grand jury. And before this board was seated, there was morale issues with that, with the past board too, with past leadership, there was morale issues. And so you can't say that there wasn't there, you know, you can't say it's all morale issues now. It's no, let's be fair and honest and talk about what needs to be talked about, and let's clean it up and let's move forward. And this isn't something new. This is something that happens in organizations all the time, and we're going through a season, and we'll get through the season. So,
when a lot of these department heads were starting to leave, I know there were questions in the community. Can the county government still continue to operate with all these open positions? Do you feel the county is still operating as it needs to be right now?
Yeah, I feel like it is. There's definitely some areas that need to be corrected sooner than later, you know, like code compliance and a few areas within CDD. But I will tell you, if you look at the amount of stuff that we're getting done, I will tell you there are things that I've been wanting to do at Standard Park for years that are taking place because, you know, Liz is wearing two hats and she's getting things done quick. Roger's getting things done quick. I think the ship has, the new ship is that we're going to be more efficient. We're going to get things done. We're not going to have a million excuses. And so it's interesting. While we have made cuts and there are more hats being worn, I feel like we're being more efficient in getting some things done, and we're learning where we can create efficiencies, whether it's including AI with plans reviews or efficiencies with merging some departments. But I think we need to go through this building pains, and we'll come out on the other end better. But to answer your question, yes, there are some things like code compliance need to be addressed sooner than later, but I think we're also moving quicker in some areas, which is encouraging.
you alluded to, the new board has made a lot of budget cuts already. You know, looking ahead to future budgets, what are your concerns?
I think everybody's very aware of the SAFER grant coming due. You know, back in the day when the free money came out from COVID, I call it free money because it wasn't free. It was when we the government closed the economy down. We got free money from the government, but it really wasn't free. And so we put that money towards fire. Anytime I can put money towards fire or law enforcement, I'm going to. I've been criticized. Like, why do you do that even if it's a grant? My whole thing is I don't care if it's a grant. I don't care where it's coming from. My economic development plan is don't burn down. So future budgets, I am concerned about the SAFER grant going away. I know Campbell's been working on that from his angle, trying to get that renewed. We'd all like to see that renewed. If it's not, then we're going to have some, I guess, coming to Jesus moments as far as our budget, because that's going to turn into about a $6 million problem. And then with Cal Fire going up to a 3.0 staffing ratio into the future, and also other districts doing that, it's just fire in general is going to continue to be expensive. One good document that we have is the response time study. We had a response time study done a year or two ago, and basically we can respond to 90% of incidences within 12 minutes. And so if we lose that SAFER grant, then we can have that document to help guide us as far as fire services. But a lot of people don't want to, you know, see those services go away. And it's fine. I've told people, I agree, let's not have the services go away. And I've had people, including the person running against me, show up at board meetings and everybody's crying about, don't cut fire, don't cut fire. Okay, great. Yeah, I agree. Let's not cut fire. But then where are those people 2 hours later when we're having a budget meeting and I propose that we make cuts? Okay, hey, we know the SAFER grant's coming due. Let's start making cuts to prepare so we can start saving now. Everybody falls apart. No, we can't make cuts. Oh my God. It's like, you guys, it's so easy to say, just do it all. And, you know, don't cut fire. But then you're not in the room 2 hours later to talk about what cuts we're going to do to get there. And so I think people just are unrealistic and they're not able to make hard decisions, but I think this board is, and I think we will, and it'll be an interesting conversation.
Need to take one more break, talking with Supervisor Anaya Kirk on this weekend's Motherload Views. Motherload Views brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. We'll have our final segment coming up in just a minute.
Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area for family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service. Call 532-2460. That's 532-2460.
And we welcome you back to Motherload Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host, talking with District 3 Tuolumne County Supervisor Anaya Kirk about county issues and issues facing his individual district, which includes Twain Hart, Tuolumne, and many communities up the Highway 108 corridor. Supervisor Kirk, you held a town hall meeting recently focused just on Standard Park. I'm curious what you learned at that meeting and your opinions on what you'd like to see potentially done with Standard Park down the road.
Sure. So, yeah, I think I'll start off by giving a little bit of history about Standard Park as far as where this conversation came from. Back in 2021, our board decided to go out to do an RFP to see if an organization in the community wanted to partner with us and run it better. Unfortunately, those conversations, you know, they ended up not evolving into anything, and so it came to a end of discussion. So I kind of laugh when some supervisors are like, where did this conversation come from? And it's like, yeah, you know, it's been around since 2021 at least. But so in wake of the budget, but then also, so the budget is actually not as bad as people would think. A couple of years ago, it was around the 330,000 mark. There's been some budget changes. There's been some better capturing of numbers and placing budget line items within proper departments. And so basically where we're at now is, we did a $75,000 increase to fees, and I think with that being said, it makes us negative about $60,000 to $80,000 or so in the red with Standard Park, which isn't a big deal at all. It's not. But if you really want to fix up Standard Park and make it great, it's going to probably be a million plus. Where I'm coming from as a father of four and somebody who does traveling sports is I go to these other areas and I see how amazing the fields are, and I'm like, man, we can do better than this, you know, for our kids. So there has been some conversation I've had with some folks who are interested in potentially partnering. not partnering, but potentially doing a lease or a deed restriction. And I want to make it very clear, they would lose money doing this, but they feel like it's worth looking into because they think the community could definitely thrive on what they could do. So I want to be careful when we talk about Standard Park that whoever would do this would lose money definitely at the beginning. So what I've done is I've met with user groups, the folks who rent it out, and then we had that town hall. And I think the summary of it is people are open to it, but really all they care about is the safety of the kids and all they and really the affordability. However that plays out doesn't really matter. I think an unfortunate thing, though, that I did learn is just the board raising fees, $75,000. For example, that $75,000 fee, TCYS, a soccer club, they had to raise their fees by $50 to their users. And because of that, 200 kids didn't play soccer this year. So they used to have 1,300 kids. They had 1,100 kids. And to me, that was devastating because if you know me, you know how much I love kids. You know how much I've been talking about adverse childhood experiences, ACEs. You know that I've been pushing for law enforcement. I've been pushing to get the DA and the sheriff to have a private team to go after crimes against children, elderly, hate crimes, LGBTQ community. I want everybody in our community to feel safe. And that, and so my heart is safety, and kids is number one in that. And so when I heard that, it really was a check for me to potentially go back and relook at those fees. But then also, if we go down this path of an RFP for a lease or deed restriction, we need to absolutely protect our locals and our kids and make sure that it's affordable. So after that meeting, I decided I'm going to go two directions. I'm going to go. One path is to give the board an option to do an RFP for a lease or deed restriction. But then the other path is I'm working with staff right now to come up with a plan to fix up Standard Park ourselves, because I'm done with no from staff. I'm done with no from people saying we can't do that, or we can't use volunteers, or no. No, it's done. It's part of the culture change that we're doing within the county government is we're going to get to yes. If you can't help me get to yes, you probably shouldn't be working here. Not doing anything illegally, but we can get to yes, all right? If we can have Lev Tuomi come out there and do work, then why can't I have other volunteers come out there and do work and fix the irrigation system? So that's where we're headed. That's Standard Park.
Yeah, we got just a few minutes left, or a couple minutes left on Motherload Views. Anything else you're working on?
I think the number one thing I want to leave folks with, and this is, we talked about why I'm running for re-election. This is probably a huge piece of that, is the Water Smart Grant with UC Merced. We all know that we're dumping money with grants into the U.S., into Forest Service land, several projects to keep from burning down. But how are we going to maintain that? Years ago, when we reactivated the water agency, I met with downstream water users, and I heard that they were getting black, I forget the name of it, but just basically this black silt, this black crap in their water, which is contaminating. It's hard to clean. And they were also having to go into their waterways and do dredging and clean out all the debris that were coming down. You know, when it's burned, comes down the waterways into the lakes. So the whole Water Smart Grant program developed from that idea of what if we can capture with technology that when we do these projects like Cerro 2.0, Cerro, all those projects, we can show that when snow comes down, instead of it landing in a crowded forest and evaporating on the tree branches, instead it lands in a thinned, properly maintained forest, it lands on the ground, it recharges the water, it keeps the forest from burning down. And then really at the end of the day, especially when we're talking about drought, we're putting more water back into the ground, which is putting more water back into drinking. So the point I'm getting at is I want to go to the downstream water users. I want to go to the folks in San Francisco, Hetch Hetchy, TID, all of them, and say, look, for 0.00001% of your budget, you know how big Hetch Hetchy's budget is, San Francisco? It's insane. If I could get a $7 or $10 million charge from them every year to put into our forest, then we can maintain our forest. So the Water Smart program is about providing that data. I'm already working with legislators. I'm already working with people to potentially push for big things in the future so that we can provide healthy drinking water to people downstream, and then they can in turn give us a little bit of money in return to keep from burning down and keeping that water clean. So that's where I'm headed, and I'd love to continue that work.
Supervisor Kirk, we've run out of time. Thanks for coming on Motherload Views.
Thank you, BJ. And as always, I appreciate it, and I'm looking forward to another year flying by and seeing you next year.
Sounds great. All right. We thank Supervisor Anaya Kirk for joining us on this weekend's Motherload Views. We'll see you back next week for more Motherload Views. We'll be joined on the show by District 5 Supervisor Jaron Brandon.
You've been listening to Motherload Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherload. Motherlode Views has been brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.